Return to Camp Blood, Episode 17, The Talented Mr. Burns. This episode is brought to you by FridayThe13thFranchise.com. Be sure to head over to the FridayThe13thFranchise.com for up-to-the-minute news about anything and everything Friday-related. And by Scarefest 8. Go over to ScarefestCon.com for convention dates and ticketing information.
Scarefest, the largest horror and paranormal convention in the United States, returns to the Lexington Center September 11th through the 13th. Meet over 80 of your favorite horror and paranormal celebrities. Plus, there's a costume ball, seminars, movie screenings, and lots of scary merchandise. For more info, visit thescarefest.com. Scarefest, September 11th through the 13th at the Lexington Center. Be brave if you dare, but don't come alone.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood, the only podcast recorded on location at Pinehurst Youth Development Center. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, E.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Eric.
What's up, y'all?
And Oz.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our group youth session. I love these group sessions, man. Highlight of my day.
So before we get into part five tonight, I wanted to talk about something. It's a rant that I saw posted by someone who will remain unnamed. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I wanted to touch on a couple of things this person said. Basically, they were bitching about the fact that Scream put horror in the mainstream and that it forever ruined the genre, going on to say that they wished a slow, painful death of Jamie Kennedy and Wes Craven for doing it. So here's the thing about things hitting the mainstream, and you often hear this kind of shit about, you know, certain types of music. Now, granted, sometimes the mainstream does fuck up a genre of music. I mean, but here's the thing about something moving into the mainstream. That means they have a bigger budget, a better pool of actors, and a wider reach for the audience.
Yep.
A better pool of actors, Johnny Depp, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, you can't really count that because Johnny Depp had just started. He wouldn't have fucking household name back then. Come on.
It even says introducing Johnny Depp in the credits.
He knew he had something special. He had already sold the rights to Freddy. So what's he do? He creates Ghostface.
Even Kevin Bacon was new then.
I know, right? I mean, granted, you would not catch Kevin Bacon in a movie with that low of a budget right now. You just wouldn't do it.
No. You might Johnny Depp, though.
If Tim Burton does it, doesn't matter the budget. Johnny Depp will fucking do it.
That's true. But, I just want to address this point of wishing deaths upon Jamie. Well, wish death upon Jamie Kennedy. That dude sucks. But Wes Craven, man, come on.
You can't knock Wes Craven, man.
I know, right?
Fucking legend, man. Get the fuck out of here.
So this person also went on to whine about how modern horror filmmakers are only in it for the blockbuster. Newsflash, son. Most people who make movies are in it for the blockbuster.
Oh, shit, right? That's like hearing a musician saying, oh, he's only trying to win a Grammy. What the fuck is this for? Shit.
He's only trying to have a number one album. Well, duh.
Good God, man. I mean, they were only people trying to get an Oscar out of The Godfather. I mean, shit. Well, you know.
you mean people don't finance movies so that they can go broke and live in a box under a bridge somewhere?
No. They want to live in a van down by the river.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I stand corrected.
I know of a guy that did that.
Yeah, but you're in North Carolina, son.
Yeah, I was just referencing Demon. So.
Yeah, I know.
But Eric's a dick.
I'm sorry.
And finally, the author rounded out the rant by talking about how the reboot, you know, talking about Friday the 13th, 2009, wasn't realistic and today's kids don't act like they do in that film. Now, I just want to say that really Derek Mears' portrayal of Jason in that film is probably the most realistic he's ever been portrayed since part two.
Oh, shit.
Correct.
I guarantee you this guy is walking around outside. It's like 80-some degrees everywhere right now. This guy's walking around with a fucking scarf on right now. Guarantee it. Goddamn hipsters.
And I mean, you're telling me that anything after part four is realistic? Seriously.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, is it realistic to go from Crystal Lake to freaking Manhattan in a boat?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Streams and causeways.
Or from the bowels of hell to the outer reaches of space.
Ha!
Yeah, that's realistic.
Or to go Frankenstein and stab a rotting corpse with a spike from a fence, and it just miraculously gets struck by lightning and brings his ass back to life. That's pretty realistic too, right?
I mean, hate the reboot all you want, right? I mean, because there are films in this franchise that people just don't like. I mean, Return to Camp Blood is famous for hating on Jason Goes to Hell. But at least hate it for legitimate reasons. I mean, it took me doing this show and going through some of the older titles to really appreciate the fucking love note that was the reboot. And that's what it was.
Amen. You know, something that really irks me with that, the actors don't portray kids of today. Okay, so you're telling me there's not a rich douchebag with daddy's money out there. You're telling me that there's not stoners. You're telling me that there's not geeks. You're telling me there's not sluts. You're telling me that there's not the innocent victim that happens to kind of be with the douche, but ends up falling for the good guy. That never happens.
That part might be unrealistic.
Pretty much every day.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend all night on this person because clearly they had an axe to grind, and really I wasn't trying to fucking hear it. I even put in the post, yo, I hated what you had to say so much, I'm going to address this shit on my show. All right, so Friday the 13th, part 5, A New Beginning. This film came out in 1985. Well, let me ask you this. Tom Morga played quote-unquote Jason. Now, I was going to save this for the end of the conversation, but fuck it. We'll just go into it now. Do you guys think that Tom Morga should be able to claim the title as having played Jason?
Yes.
Well, I mean, he did it. I mean...
Well, technically...
Granted, it was supposed to be Roy.
Oh, technically, he didn't play Jason.
Well, right.
Technically... Well,
that's what it was implying, though, you know?
Although he played the Roy Burns version of Jason with the blue mask, I think he has the right to claim that he portrayed Jason because he also did play the visage of Jason when Tommy had his hallucinations and he had the right mask, the right outfit, everything. That was still Tom Morga. So had he not done that, I would say no, he played Roy. He did not play Jason. But since he did do that, and he also played Jason at the beginning when he's having the dream, and he comes up out of the, you know, with the creepy crawlies all over him and the night crawlers. He played him in that scene too. So that was supposed to be the real Jason. So for those reasons, I think I consider Tom Morga actually more of a Jason than even Dick Wayland was.
Or Warrington Gillette.
Well, no, as much as, you know, it irks me because Steve Dash did the entire movie, Gillette did a scene, but the scene that Gillette did, he did play Jason. And the reason he gets credit is because he was the Jason with the makeup. He wore the makeup and it was in the film. And that's why, because I asked why, you know, Dash didn't get credit too. And that was the explanation that I was given, because he didn't wear the makeup and Gillette did. That's why it's credited as it is.
Well, I mean, even while you're watching the movie and seeing the performance of Morga, like, he pretty much acts like an unstoppable force. Also, the motherfucker gets like mowed down by Reggie the Reckless, he gets ran over by a backhoe and still gets up and continues his killing spree. So I think based on like that alone, he should get the title of Yes, bitches, I played Jason.
Well, and he actually did get hit with that backhoe. I mean, he took a shot. I mean, he was hurt when he took that hit. And he did portray, even though he was the imposter Jason, he did portray it as if he were the real Jason.
Did you guys notice that he kind of played it like Michael Myers? His movements, his body.
Morga played Michael Myers in part 4.
Yeah.
He's the only person who has actually played Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
And you know what's funny is when I met him, I said that, I told my kids that, and he didn't even realize. He was like, holy shit, you know what? You're right. it was funny.
All right, so moving away from Jason talk, the first thing that struck me about this movie was the fucking cover, right? The mask on the cover. Now, we know that the Jason mask from part 3 was a sort of recreation of a Red Wings goalie mask. But the mask on the cover of part 5 is actually a Cooper HM6 goalie mask from the 70s, and it looks nothing like a Jason mask.
At all.
Except for the fact that it's white.
It has eye holes.
Yeah. But that's kind of going along the lines of the hockey mask getting it wrong theme. I mean, they got it wrong in the final chapter. The axe wound's on the wrong side. There's no chevrons on the mask. It's on the cover of the final chapter.
You know, it's funny because I remember in the theater watching part 5, and I picked up the blue chevrons right away, and I was sitting there thinking, what the hell? You know, and I thought, you know what? I was like, either maybe they just really, this is either not right or it's just really shitty movie making. And I don't know which.
Yeah.
Well, with this series, it could have gone either way.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many continuity errors, man. This, you could chalk it up to anything.
Yeah. But like my whole thing with the continuity errors is like these movies, you know, part 1 comes out in 1980, part 2 comes out in 81, part 3 comes out in 82, part 4 comes out in 84, mm-hmm. part 5 comes out in 85. They were in such quick succession that you should have known what the fuck was going on.
Well, true, but, you know, in their defense, from part 4 to 5, you know, the original concept for 5 was for Corey Feldman to return and he was going to be, you know, Jason. The idea was never to bring, they weren't going to bring Jason back. He was going to be the new killer.
So speaking of Tommy, he pretty much acts just like you would expect from someone suffering from PTSD. You know, you finally get to see the aftermath. I mean, you saw a little bit with Alice in part 2, but you really, with Tommy in part 5, you really get to see someone who has faced Jason and lived, you know, several years later. I mean, obviously he's, you know, considerably older than he was in part 4. But I think I loved Shepard. What is his name? John Shepard.
John Shepard. Yeah.
I loved his performance as Tommy in this movie because like it was totally fucking believable.
He had like what, 36 lines the entire, or
24.
The entire movie. I mean, but it worked for that character. And I could totally see how he, you know, he must have taken some Ed Parker, you know, Kempo or some shit, man, because he turned himself into a badass.
Well, I mean, you got to figure, like, in the intervening years, it seems like he took some kind of class, some fighting classes or something, because he whips fucking ass in that movie, dude.
Yeah.
He does. He does, but I would have rather seen, since Corey Feldman was, he did the cameo at the beginning, but he couldn't do the rest of the movie because he was filming Goonies. I would have rather seen Tommy or Corey Feldman's Tommy Jarvis recast and bring that in as opposed to bringing John Shepard in. That's so much of a continuity age difference that doesn't make a lot of sense.
They have done that in the past. Now, remember, part 2 happens 5 years after part 1.
Right.
Right?
Correct. Yep.
So it's not like they haven't ever done that before.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, no, like, I think they did a good job with casting who they did and having him act like he did in this film. I mean, like I was saying, he is obviously suffering from PTSD, and he may as well have been a fucking soldier just coming back from war. And, you know, these certain things set him off. And I just love the way they portrayed him in this. Seriously, like, he's my favorite character. He's one of my favorite characters in these first five movies.
Well, and you can feel his pain. I mean, it resonates from him, you know, what he's been through and the struggle that he's, you know, trying to hold on to his sanity in any way he can. But, you know, he's haunted by this, you know, by Jason.
That is seriously apparent when Reggie, you know, scares him with the spider, and then he turns around, puts one of his masks on,
right,
and fucking scares Reggie back.
Right.
You can kind of see, like, you know, he understands the problems that he has with himself, but he also understands, hey, maybe I should not beat the shit out of this kid.
Yeah, that was probably a wise decision.
The only thing that I kind of wish that and I never ever do this in the rest of the series, is I wished that they had at least mentioned or alluded to what happened to Trish, because they never say anything. All you see is him holding that picture of Trish and his mom. Mm-hmm. I mean, they never say, you know, where the hell Trish is or what happened to her. I mean, you assume that she recovered and that she's, you know, okay. But at the same time, she seemed like she was a pretty good older sister. You would think that she wouldn't have just checked out and not, you know.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, from that aspect, yeah, you're right. She seemed like a, you know, good older sister and stuff. And from that aspect, maybe she didn't really recover from it all that well. You know what I mean? And, you know, they had to send him his own way because she was still fucked up from it. You know what I mean?
That's true, too.
Or it could be that the sense that you get at the end of part four, that, you know, he gives that last look to the camera.
He's just out there.
Maybe Trish was scared shitless of her own brother.
Right.
Yeah, that's another possibility.
Yeah, or another possibility is that he really did fucking kill her, like, you know, so many people have insinuated over the years.
Yeah, but when they bring him in and he's in the doctor's talking to
Pam.
Oh my god, Pam. Yeah, sorry. The doctor's talking to Pam. You know, they ask what happened, and he points out, you know, that I forget the exact verbiage, but that he killed Jason. You figure, had he killed his sister, that they would have mentioned that as well. Right.
Right. Because he says it was a self-defense killing of a psychopathic killer. And
yeah,
he would have, you would think he would have mentioned, and then he went on, you know, and then a homicide of his sister, you know, as well. But because she actually, I noticed because I literally just watched it, because she asked, how did they diagnose it? So, I mean, he's actually given Pam the diagnosis from Tommy's file. So, I mean, that would definitely have been in there, and that would have definitely been something that they would have addressed, not only the self-defense killing, but then the result afterward of him killing his sister had that happened.
Right.
But that last scene, I mean, you could take it as him hallucinating. Well, hang on. I won't even say that, because whatever happened after that, it's implied and it's not explicit. So,
yeah, it's all up to speculation.
Yeah, I mean, the last scene in part four is up to speculation. And that's further reinforced by all the, you know, the hallucinations he has in part five. He is constantly seeing Jason. And, of course, they get the mask wrong, like, almost every time. But
yeah, that's life, yo.
They obviously don't mention people that have homicidal tendencies, because why would they give Vic an axe? The dude's got rage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, we don't really know why each one of those people are there. I mean, we can speculate, and you could figure out, like, okay, you know, it seems like Vic has some aggressive issues. The couple, Tina and Eddie, they're obviously nymphos. I mean, other people, what?
Oh, I was going to point out, since you mentioned the nymphos, the girl that played Tina, her last name is actually Voorhees.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Deborah Voorhees.
Yep.
Carry on, sir.
Yeah, I always used to love that when I watched that movie back in the day. It was like, hell yeah, she's related to Jason. There is a Voorhees in this film.
Yeah.
And it ain't Jason.
No, huh. I think Vi was just there because she just couldn't stop dancing.
She was a rebel.
All right, so I want to talk about Ethel for a second.
Ethel.
Big dildo.
Eat your fucking slop.
Like, who else thinks this? Who else agrees with me on this? Ethel is like a foul-mouthed version of Vicki Lawrence from Mama's Family.
Yes. I was just watching it and thinking the exact same thing.
That's funny. I used to watch that shit with my grandma. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm pretty sure a junior could call her aunt or mom.
Did anybody else, like, when they saw Junior, did y'all think, holy shit, that's fucking Randy Quaid from Christmas
Randy Quaid, yes.
Dude, that is hilarious.
Hitter's full.
No, we did not talk about this before the show.
Nope.
Yes, that could have been Randy Quaid, and it would have been the same fucking dude.
Yes, very much so.
Oh my god, those two, like, I think if you count it up, they probably weren't in the movie any more than maybe 10 minutes, but totally worth it, every second of it.
That was the best 10 minutes.
They were hysterical, man. Oh my god.
You know what I thought would have been what excellent would be is the two funniest people in this movie, they didn't have any scenes together. But if you would have been able to have a scene with Ethel and Billy, those two.
Man, I feel like we just talked about
it. No doubt.
Weird.
Stay tuned.
Which you could probably find in the future at campbloodpodcast.com/19.
Does that count as foreshadowing?
Yes.
We're just clairvoyant.
We know things before they're actually things.
Yes, we do.
And you know, I would have loved to have seen those two playing off each other. That would have been hysterical.
Yeah,
I feel like you said that too in that episode in the future.
It definitely hasn't happened.
Am I having deja vu?
I think probably, so, man.
Probably.
I love the way that Danny Wineman plays out the final chase scene because, you know, they're Pam and Reggie are visiting his brother, and then Tommy and Junior, you know, Tommy kicks the shit out of Junior, and then
they hurt me, Mom.
And then he disappears.
He's staring at the Bates Motel looking trailer park sign.
And I mean, so even at that point, I mean, whenever I originally watched part five, A New Beginning, at that point, I thought Tommy was the killer, was Jason.
Well, hang on a second. Given that we already know what our special episode for this film is going to be, I would rather not get into this right now because
good point.
We are going to cover this idea in episode 21.
All I'll say is this, okay? As much as this installment is renowned and hated because the purists say, oh, I hate it because it's not the real Jason, you know what? It's actually the last one before the reboot that I actually really liked because it stays true to the formula of the original. Now, it hasn't been since the original with Pamela that this one is the first one since then that's actually kind of a whodunit. You don't know who the killer is. You think it might be Tommy, but you're not sure. Is it really Jason or is it Tommy? If it's Jason, how did he come back? You don't know.
That's a valid point.
And you don't see the killer in this one until the climax of the movie, because just like you did with part one, you know, with Pamela, you never saw a leg, you saw a hand, but you didn't see the entire killer until she shows up, until she rolls up and Alice is there. And this one holds true in is of the same formula. Now, granted, Danny Steinman coming from, you know, exploit cinema, and you know, he did up the sleaze factor, and it is very sleazy, but it's still a very entertaining and very, I think, a very good horror film on its own.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people give this movie a lot of hate, but like you said, I mean, it's a classic whodunit. You don't know, and
the kills are excellent. I mean,
yeah exactly. Yeah.
They're new. I mean, you see some new stuff. It's not just the same old, you know, machete to the throat or what. I mean, you have that, yes, but there's some unique stuff.
There's head shimmers to the eyes.
Yeah.
I mean,
You know what? I'm sorry, everybody, for sounding so excited about that one. Wow. I just thought it was real creative. I'm sorry if that's weird.
Hey, man, we used to look at crime photos of the Black Dahlia, so I understand what you're saying.
Like I say, that sort of thing is just interesting to me, like what brings people to do shit like that. So, you know. You know, something else I wanted to point out, it's kind of like a minute piece of the film. But I don't remember the guy's name. The dude that showed up at Ethel's door looking for some food or whatever, looking for work.
I don't think they ever gave him a name. They just
Well, that makes sense.
No, it was Raymond. It was Raymond. His name was Raymond.
But like I'm saying, there's that recurring thing again, where you're not supposed to be a peeping Tom. He made the same mistake that Crazy Ralph did.
What's that you say?
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a dance curse.
Let's talk about the chase scene. I mean, I know in our last episode in the one through four recap, we talked about our favorite chase scenes, and I thought this one was great.
Yeah, if you look at it, I think it's sort of like a mashup of part three and four. If you look at it that way.
But the thing I really love about the final chasing is the fact that you see when Roy comes into the, what is it, a barn, Pam lures Roy to her hiding spot. She does this shit on purpose. You know, there's all kind of noise going on in the little thing she's hiding in. And then she comes out fucking chainsaws a-blazing.
Yes, she does.
I love that part.
Yeah.
I do too, but have you ever been using a chainsaw cutting down a tree and got a hold of something? I mean, and you don't have any control of it. And hitting a machete like that? That machete would have been gone.
Well, it depends on
what kind of chain is on there.
Yeah, exactly. It could have been some shitty fucking, I bought that shit from Walmart chain.
Well, you got to think, look at it this way. If that was any decent chainsaw, why wouldn't they have Vic using that damn thing instead of chopping it with an axe?
That's a very good point.
Well, no, it's not. That could have just been his shit. You know, I'm going to take my anger out with this axe.
Like the dad in Amityville Horror.
That could have been part of his therapy. Yeah.
Just like the dad in Amityville Horror. He just gets wigs out and goes outside and chops wood.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I find myself sometimes doing shit a little bit the hard way because it relaxes me a little bit, you know. So I can understand why Vic was using the fucking the axe instead of a chainsaw. You know, because he's trying to work out his fucking anger on that piece of wood, you know?
Or maybe they wouldn't let him use the chainsaw.
This fucking guy. No way he's getting the chainsaw.
If he comes at me with an axe, at least I got a heads up.
Unless you're Joey.
Joey did not have...
Well, let's talk about Joey for a second. Who felt bad for Joey?
I did.
I did. I felt bad for Joey.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Somebody should at least cut back on them damn chocolate bars, man. One a day is.
He was like a much more depressing version of Shelly.
Yeah, way.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I thought.
Is it possible that Shelly and he were brothers? Let's just say they were odd similarities.
Yeah.
But did you notice that the other EMTs like, come on, Roy, you scared to get your hands dirty, and they lift up the white sheet. Did you notice that his arm had been cut off and was laying on his back?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was severed.
I mean, that this movie, people knock it, they do, because they say it wasn't Jason, but I mean, it still had all it had the recipe, and
it definitely had the gore, that's for sure.
Oh, Well, and I know that's something that this person that wrote that rant also bitched about. Like, oh, these movies have become so formulaic and stuff. I'm like, bitch, have you never seen Part One? Like, every single one of these movies is formulaic.
Yep.
Okay. Like, that's just the part of their draw. You like them because you know what's gonna happen. You know who's gonna fucking win. You know who's gonna die. Pretty much.
You're just waiting to see how it's gonna happen.
Yeah,
right.
Like exactly.
You know
exactly.
It's coming. You just don't know when or how.
So, how about Demon? You know, we have made it a point throughout this entire show to point out the fucking assholes who do not know how to treat their women, right? And Demon is definitely falls under that category.
You're gonna get it, bitch.
You're gonna get it, bitch.
Soon as I stand up and not wipe my ass, I'm getting it.
Oh god.
Dude, it was the same way with the dude in fucking Part Three.
Yes.
Let me stand up and not wipe my ass.
Well, it's worse in this one because you see the roll of freaking toilet paper right there, man. I'm like, use the freaking White Cloud right there. You got your hand on it.
And from what he described, you know he made a mess.
Oh yeah. You know that wasn't a clean one.
All right, I think with that, we are going to transition into some listener mail, sirs. So we got a voicemail from Mike Bren of Bren 96 Creations, the guy that we interviewed back on episode 12, campbloodpodcast.com/12. And let me just play this shit real quick.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mike from Bryn 96 Creations chiming in. I wanted to add my 2 cents about the ending to Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning. Right? In Part 5, it ends with a close-up of Tommy Jarvis. Right? He's wearing the hockey mask. He has his knife raised, and it looks like he's just about to destroy Pam. For starters, I think it's an awesome ending. Right, it's fade to black, totally leaves the audience with this huge cliffhanger. But more importantly, you know, that final scene to me always seemed like this was the true new beginning. Right, and that Tommy Jarvis was now going to pick up the reins as Jason. I would just love to see a sequel that followed Tommy Jarvis once he has completely just snapped. I think that'd be an awesome story. Maybe see him go back to his childhood home and hunt. So yeah, you know, kick that one around for a little bit. And oh yeah, one more thing. Kane Hodder was clearly the best Jason. All right, guys. Later.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Zombie Jason, but then again, I am a huge fan of Jason. And I know it's a contradiction, but you know, maybe like Friday the 15th with Tommy Jarvis instead of Jason and spinning off on that. I mean, I don't know. It without it being Jason, it just, I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think? I
agree with him. I would like to see that because that was the original intent. And direction for the franchise to go was that Jason's curse was supposed to be passed on to Tommy, and that horror is sort of contagious is the way they envisioned taking the franchise, not bringing Jason back. I think that would have been, you know, as much as like we talked earlier, that we got to see the depths of Tommy's psyche and how disturbed he was at that point. I do think it would have been good to at least see one more film, possibly even more, with Jason as the antagonist and the killer. I mean, that's the way it was set up, and that's what the intent was for Part 6. So, I mean, I would love to have, you know, seen the original, you know, original script or screenplay of Part 6 before they went in the Jason Lives direction myself.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to have seen something different done with Tommy, and I would have liked to have seen them explore more down that path. But then, you know, they tried it with Jason Goes to Hell and it didn't work.
Well, that was the whole body jumping.
Exactly.
It was Jason, but it wasn't Jason. I mean, that's a little bit different. See, with Tommy, the thing is, though, if had they stayed with the same direction that they had set up, you could still bring Jason in the form of Tommy's hallucinations, flashbacks, whatever. So you could still get your Jason in there if you really wanted to, but it was, you know, Jason's just not the killer, but he's still either driving the killer or whatever. Now,
just
I've read
in the mirror in Jason Goes to Hell.
Right. And there are a lot of people that I've read and heard that have the opinion that, you know, I know we talked about whether, you know, you guys, whether Jason drowned or whether he came back to life or whatever. A lot of people I've heard the theory that Jason's spirit is what possessed Pamela. And I'm not saying that's my theory. I'm just saying I've heard and read that theory, and it's just something to think about.
Jason Goes to Hell never happened. Okay.
I wish it never happened
until we talk about it.
So here are my thoughts on this idea. I feel like that was the route they should have went. I mean, because it's obvious that they were planning for a long-term story, right? Otherwise, these ideas wouldn't have even been getting kicked around in the writer's room. I would have loved to have seen that too. Like, it makes sense that at the end of part 5, Tommy takes the job of fucking Jason. Now, as you will see in our future episodes, when we actually get to part 6, that was not the fucking case. They went a totally different direction than they probably should have.
Right.
But I know that Corey Feldman, or at least this is a rumor, Corey Feldman was kicking around the idea of writing a new Jason movie with Tommy and Jason facing off for the last time.
Yeah, I've heard him in an interview say that he would love to come back and play and go another round with Tommy. And I've heard Kane Hodder say he would love to come back and kick Corey Feldman's ass. So I think it'd be killer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I would love to see that film, but I don't think right now it makes sense, especially after the reboot.
Yeah.
Well, they could always do a direct sequel to a previous, kind of like they've done with, you know, some of the Halloween movies. You know, the H2O is a direct sequel to.
Yeah.
It doesn't pay attention to any of the 4, 5, 6 or whatever. It's sequel to this.
That's,
you know,
I mean,
they could always do. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm just saying that there's ways they could do it.
Here's what I envision. We got the 2009 reboot, right? We're reintroduced to Jason. He gets his mask. The next movie is a setup for Tommy, right? And then the next movie after that is the one where Corey Feldman and Kane Hodder fucking duke it out.
You know,
in their wheelchairs or the walkers and shit. I mean, by the time that happens, I mean, look how long it's taken them to do this next one. I mean,
well, word around the campfire is they want to do it right. So, I mean, if they do, I'm okay with that. I mean,
oh yeah, not to bring up the fucking rant again, but that was a point that this person even brought up. It was like, oh, this movie's been pushed back and back and back and back. And it's like, you know, you're not making Gone with the Wind. You're making a fucking Jason movie.
Dude, right. Gone with the Wind is an overrated-ass movie anyway, so.
Well, but the funny thing about that rant.
And they got
rant,
a Confederate flag in that motherfucker.
the funny thing about that rant is the person is contradicting themselves because on one hand, they're saying you're not making a Gone with the Wind Oscar worthy type movie, but then they're bitching about, you know, it getting pushed back and pushed, you know, you can't have it both ways. I mean, do you want them to rush and put out a movie that you're just going to rip apart anyway? Cause that's just what you did in your rant that you sent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I would rather them take their time, and yes, I want to see the next Friday movie as much as anybody. But you know what? I want to see a good one. I've seen enough shit fests that, you know, I want to see a good one. Like I said, the reboot was the first one that I actually liked since part 5.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
So that's 1985 to 2009. So we had in a conglomerate of horse shit in between.
All right, gentlemen, final thoughts on Friday the 13th, A New Beginning.
I will say, while this movie tends to get, I don't know, not like universally panned, but, you know, pretty well-rounded panning the movie's received, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I think they were trying to go in a certain direction. I don't think it was all that well executed. However, it still came out as a pretty decent movie. And, you know, there was some funny characters in it with, like, Ethel and Billy and the Junior and all that. And, you know, I don't think that the pseudo Jason was played all that poorly. I mean, if you're watching it, you know what you're watching. You can tell that it's obviously not actually him. But, you know, between that and then Tommy being played so well and just how he was all fucked up from his encounter with Jason, I think overall it was a decent movie.
Fair enough.
Yeah, decent. I mean, solid 3 stars.
Well, 3 out of 3 stars out of what?
20.
Oh.
Out of 20?
No, I'm joking.
Oh, you're full of shit.
Maybe 3 out of 5, maybe.
Yeah, I'd give it that.
I'd give it a 3 out of 5.
I give it 3.5. I mean, like I said, I agree. It follows the formula, you know. It had some really good kills.
Following a formula is fucking mainstream and corporate, and you shouldn't do that.
Well, yeah, they can eat shit. All right, because you know this was a good for as much as everybody hates it, wants to call it the redhead bastard stepchild of the franchise. I agree with you there. I dig the movie. I mean, there's likable characters in it. You feel Tommy's pain, and you know, you can relate to some of the characters. And you know, to be honest with you, as in 1985, as an 11-year-old, you know, approaching adolescence, this movie got me through some awkward teenage years. I'll tell you that with some of the cast.
You old bastard.
I feel better.
I was 2 in 1985.
Nobody cares.
So I am going to do something that I don't normally do, and I'm going to speak on the final thoughts segment. I know, right? I don't normally do this.
Drum roll.
But yeah, like everybody, like to echo everyone else, a lot of hate is given to in the Friday franchise, but they were trying to take the movie in a new direction. And I assume back in 1985, you thought the franchise was going in a certain direction, and then obviously it didn't go that way. But because of that fact, I feel like this movie was unique in that regard, because the killer was not Jason, and they were setting up someone else to take Jason's place because Jason's fucking dead. And that's really all I have to say about it. This movie does not deserve the bad rap that it normally gets with Friday fans at all.
No, it doesn't.
All right. As always, you can support the show by rating us on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever the hell else you use to listen to the show. Speaking of which, I'd like to thank people who have taken the time to write reviews for us. And it's been a long time coming, because we've been getting reviews since March. I mean, there's only like 5 written reviews, but, you know, I want to give credit where credit is due. And the first one comes from Cinema Inferior. Now, granted, this is another show on our network, the Tangent Bound Network, who has since rebranded themselves as the Hateful Dead. They said, "I'm glad I finally found a podcast dedicated to my favorite series of horror movies. These guys are off to a great start, and I'm really looking forward to hearing more." The next review is by Tim Nicholson Tapp. "I'm a huge fan. It's about time that there was a show dedicated to my favorite horror series." Thank you, sir. Alex Design says, "I love a show like this. Passionate and excitement that is really entertaining. Looking forward to more episodes. Appreciate it." Rambo 50505 says, "Great insight and theories. Keep up the good work." Yeah, well, we're awesome like that.
Yeah, more or less.
My favorite iTunes review is from JBreezy0102. The podcast is so fun to listen to on a chill day with some good food. The energy is so relaxed and everyone is funny. That's right, bitches. Everyone.
Replace that food with some booze and you got us right.
There's also the added emotional heft of a father-daughter pastime here. Well, not since the first episode.
Still disappointed.
For lovers of the series or even casual horror fans. And so I really appreciate everyone who's taking the time to write a review on iTunes. And for you, motherfucker, who gave us the one star, the least you could have done is wrote why you fucking hate us so much.
Finally got enough reviews to have an average rating.
I know,
and
right?
It's 4.5 now. Appreciate it, Bo.
You dick.
Thank you so much, people. You know, that I mean, that just that means we're at least doing justice to what we aim to do justice to.
Yep.
Yeah, keep them coming, and feel free to comment on the site or whatever, and you know, send us your questions and, you know, theories. I mean, we love to read those and talk about them.
I know, and like, if you legitimately hate the show, and that's fine if you do.
Right.
There are plenty of other Friday shows out there. You could listen to Thank God It's Friday the 13th, which is another good show. There are many other good Friday shows out there, and if you're going to give us a one star, that's fine. If it's legitimate, at least tell us why you give us a one star, so maybe there's something we could improve on, and, you know, I just really appreciate it. So, you know, like the normal spiel goes, if you like to support us financially, check out campbloodpodcast.com/donate. There's many options there, from Audible subscriptions to PayPal donations.
Amazon.
Exactly. If you want to ask us a question or vindicate a theory you might have, you can contact the show by sending an email to feedback@campbloodpodcast.com. You can also text or leave us a voicemail at 757-637-0216. Until next time.
You go to Camp Blood, ain't ya? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
Return to Camp Blood is a proud member of the Tangent Bound Network. Yeah,
it wouldn't be the only thing been cut lately.
Whoa.
Oh.
Yikes. Oh, no.
All right. Let's get back on point. That was perfect,
you've
dude.
You've got to have that in there. Yeah. I mean,
fucking hipsters.
Prediction.
There is Eric's F-bomb for the episode.
Yep.
There's your one. You got.
They're strategically placed.